Coming up on KUCB News, the Coast Guard has suspended the search for a missing man, but his family is still looking, and the results of Unalaska's election. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. The Coast Guard has called off the search for a man reported missing in Captain's Bay, but his family wants help from volunteers to continue it. Willie Robinson was reported missing Tuesday. A Coast Guard MH-65 helicopter crew conducted five separate searches for Robinson, and numerous Good Samaritan vessels and Unalaska public safety personnel searched 17 miles of Captain's Bay. The Coast Guard reports weather on scene was southeast winds at 24 miles per hour, with choppy seas at a temperature of about 50 degrees. As of our air deadline, the Unalaska Department of Public Safety has not responded to request for comment. Family and friends of Robinson say they are looking for volunteers who can assist from their skiffs, who can dive, or can walk the beach. For more information on the search, contact Janae at 359-2299 or Katina at 359-1191. After yesterday's election, Unalaska's only contested race is still too close to call. Preliminary results show City Councilor Sherry Coleman holds a narrow 9-vote lead over challenger Vince Tudyakov Sr., but there are 40 ballots left to count. City Clerk Marjorie Veter says those absentee and questioned ballots will be canvassed Friday morning to determine the final outcome.
Since the race is close between Ms. Coleman and Mr. Tudyakov for seat G, that's when we'll have our information, Friday at 10 o'clock.
Meanwhile, Unalaska's other races were decided last night by comfortable margins. Alejandro Bong-Tungle earned another term at City Council seat F, while Carlos Tayag won his first public office at School Board seat A. Both ran unopposed and took home more than 75% of the vote. The election brought 409 Unalaskans to the polls, placing projected turnout at less than 25% of registered voters. The city clerk says that's on par with recent elections featuring only one contested race and no ballot initiatives. KUCB will bring you more on yesterday's election after officials canvass the outstanding ballots on Friday. Voting may be over for the local election, but Unalaskans can still register to vote ahead of next month's state election. The deadline is this Sunday, October 7th, 1 month before voters decide Alaska's governor, lieutenant governor, and U.S. representative to Congress, as well as their state lawmakers to Juneau. You can still register to vote at Unalaska City Hall, the public library, or online at voter-registration.alaska.gov. Penn Air is up for auction today, more than a year after the Southwest Alaska airline filed for bankruptcy protection. Officials have declined to name the prospective buyer who submitted bids last week. So while the region waits to see who becomes the winning bidder, we are re-airing this August story about how the sale will work and who may be involved. KUCB's Laura Craigle has more.
The Siebert family founded Alaska-grown Penn Air in 1955, and they still own it today. The company includes 430 employees, 10 airplanes, and 8 routes across Bristol Bay, the Alaska Peninsula, and the Aleutian Chain. Last August, the airline filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy with $15 million worth of debt. It's incurred another $5 million since then to stay operating. But CEO Danny Siebert doesn't seem too concerned. He's issued this message to customers with help from spokesperson Missy Roberts.
They should know that I'm going to still be here.
We're not leaving.
No, I'm not leaving. I've been flying in Southwest Alaska for 45 years. I got another 45 years left in me.
That promise comes after a bankruptcy court judge scheduled an auction this fall when the company will be sold to the most competitive bidder. Siebert says flights will continue normally during what's called a 363 sale,
which is the sale of the company's assets as an entire operating entity.
That means the top bidder will take control of everything Penair owns, leases, or won by contract, minus its debts.
All the employees, all the aircraft, all the routes, the entire business that we're doing today will still be the same business that operates the day after the sale.
At least it'll still be that same business until a new owner decides to change things. That's according to Jerry McHale, an accountant from Florida who's been court-appointed to oversee the sale as an independent trustee.
My role is to attempt to stabilize the situation. I don't want somebody to buy the company on Friday and shut down the routes on Monday.
After the sale is complete, McHale says Penair's new owner will be free to add or delete routes as they see fit. But any bidder who wants to be truly competitive will have to submit a plan for continued air service in the region. McHale says he already has plenty of bidders lined up, all of whom fit that description.
Even today, I've had two come out of the woodwork today. I am unaware of anyone wanting to stop routes currently.
McHale says he's doing everything he can to get a responsible buyer at the head of Penair. Bidders have to submit audited financial statements and letters of credit to prove their upfront ability to buy the airline. They also have to demonstrate how they'll cover ongoing costs for aircraft maintenance, insurance, and storage, on top of convincing the Federal Aviation Administration that they have a credible safety program. With that criteria, McHale says there will only be so many competitive bidders. And as for rumors that the Siebert family hopes to buy out and relaunch their own company, he says there's no reason they can't try.
If Danny and his group want to put in a bid, they're welcome to it, but they're no different than, I'll pick some names out, Alaska Air or Wexford or Raven, anybody.
Already this year, Raven Alaska has expanded to Dillingham and King Salmon, two communities previously connected to Anchorage by Penair alone. In January, the carrier also said it's considering a new route to Unalaska. Meanwhile, Wexford Capital is a company that has issued loans to Penair during the bankruptcy, and Alaska Airlines used to compete with Penair in the Unalaska market before they agreed to partner on the current route. Penair's Danny Siebert declined to comment on the potential competition for his family's business. He also declined to say whether he'll make an offer himself.
I'm not going to tell you yet, but watch your bids carefully.
Both Penair officials and trustee McHale say it will not affect holiday travel or the busy winter fishing season. In Unalaska, I'm Laura Craigle.
This month, the State Department of Education will pick Alaska's Teacher of the Year. Among the five finalists is former Unalaska substitute Danielle Rhea. She now teaches 7th and 8th grade at the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School in Anchorage. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
After getting a degree in physical therapy in her native Texas, Danielle Rhea thought she'd only be in Alaska for a short time. She was working in Dutch Harbor for a summer on a fishing vessel to save up money to go to graduate school.
And while I was playing ball with some kids in the rec center, the superintendent asked me if I wanted to substitute teach, and I told him, no way. I am not teacher material. You don't want me in your school. And he said, well, I'll pay you $120 a day. And I said, cha-ching, okay, let me do that.
She was wrong about not being teacher material.
Everybody at the school in Unalaska was like, you're a natural, you should become a teacher. And of course, I fell in love with Alaska. And I went to Anchorage, got my degree, and then went and taught in Togiak and Oostyuhok.
Rhea admits that her introduction to rural Alaska was a little rocky.
I'm not going to lie to you. My first year in Togiak was a really tough year. I was spat at. People threw rocks at me. People said, go home, Gusuk. It was tough. I was not welcome. Parents wouldn't come to teacher conferences. Parents wouldn't shake my hand because I was white. But that was my first year. My second year, people were at the airport, and they were waiting for me to get off the plane because they were so happy I was back.
Rhea says many outside teachers only stay in rural communities for a year or less. Her determination to continue to teach won over the village. The strong relationship Rhea had with rural Alaska and Alaska Native children is largely what led her to help establish the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School in Anchorage. Rhea had spent years developing curriculum in rural Alaska that helped keep the kids engaged by connecting lesson plans to Native customs.
So the kids weren't connecting to the basal readers. They didn't understand the curriculum, and they weren't learning. they were checked out. So I had, in order to teach the elements of literature, I had elders come in and tell oral traditional stories, and I taught what a protagonist is, what an antagonist is. I taught everything through those stories. And then I worked with some elders also on math and science and subsistence things, and like, why did they design boats differently?
The Department of Education described Rhea's dedication to helping build the charter school from the ground up as the main reason she was nominated for Teacher of the Year. These days, Rhea spends her time teaching 7th and 8th grade language arts, social studies, science, and math. She says she's happy she's made lasting relationships with her students.
And they all come to my school, and they all volunteer, and they all tell my kids to listen to me and to participate. And so my kids see these older kids come back, like, all the time. And they're just like, wow, I'm going to be like them.
Rhea says she's proud she's been able to help mold students into passionate community members who aren't afraid to voice their perspectives. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
The other finalists for Alaska's Teacher of the Year work in Sandpoint, Sitka, Eagle River, and Houston. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she's getting a record number of calls and emails about the Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, which may be up for a procedural vote on Friday. Murkowski's office won't say how they're split, pro or con, but the Alaskans urging a no vote are making their case loudly. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports from Washington, D.C.
Murkowski says she hears you. Or at least she knows there are a lot of you weighing in on Kavanaugh.
I can truly say that the volume of incoming that we are receiving in different ways of communication has been unprecedented.
More than healthcare?
Yes, I believe more than healthcare. That wasn't the case initially, but certainly in this past week.
The last big deluge to hit Murkowski's office came last year in the lead up to the vote on repealing the Affordable Care Act. Since then, the senator says they upgraded their phone system and their email processing. They thought they were ready for heavy volume. But she says the voicemail boxes fill up in the first hour.
We've hired additional staff to do nothing more than to sort through the volume of calls that have come in overnight.
The high volume reflects the passion the Kavanaugh case has inspired. Alaska has a sky-high rate of sexual assault, and many Alaskans are telling Murkowski that confirming an accused assailant to the Supreme Court would tell victims they don't matter. Others tell Murkowski not to ruin a man's career for an accusation that isn't proven. Murkowski's spokesman won't provide the numbers, but she says people of all perspectives are contacting the senator. And scores want to make their case in person. For weeks, advocacy groups have flown Alaskans to D.C. to urge Murkowski to vote no. More are on the way. The American Civil Liberties Union is sending about 100 Alaskans to the nation's capital this week. Alaska chapter spokesman Casey Reynolds says most of the money is from the national ACLU, but it fell on him to find Alaskans willing to travel on short notice.
Well, it's been pretty amazing. I mean, me and our organizer here at the ACLU just started making calls Sunday night.
He figured it would take a few days to find 20 or 30.
Honestly, by the next morning, we had a list of about 80 people who were like, if you have the funding, I will drop everything tomorrow and make my plane reservations and go. And now that list is up to about 150.
Murkowski's scheduler emailed one group Tuesday and said she'd received 80 appointment requests overnight. Murkowski has said she found the main accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, very credible. And she says Kavanaugh denied the allegation with passion, anger, and conviction. Murkowski also says she was surprised by Kavanaugh's, quote, very direct partisan statements to the Judiciary Committee. But she's not saying yet which side she'll come down on. If the procedural vote takes place Friday, the final vote on Kavanaugh's confirmation could come as early as this weekend. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is in Unalaska this week to present the first draft of its feasibility study on a potential dredging project in Iliolok Bay. Engineers say that removing a large sandbar could open the port of Dutch Harbor to deeper draft vessels and bigger businesses, but it might also affect wildlife, currents, and erosion along Front Beach. On Alaskans still have two opportunities to hear the Corps' presentation and provide feedback that'll be incorporated into the final findings. They're presenting at City Hall tonight at 6 o'clock and then again tomorrow at noon. And that's the news from On Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.